Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. We were just interviewing Mark and Angel Chernoff. Their book is Getting Back to Happy. And now, joining us in the studio is Dr. Michael Farrell. He's a new gerontologist at the Redstone Clinic here in Park City. He's also a doctor of osteopathy, and he has an MBA. And he doesn't look old enough to have any of those degrees. But I'm curious about how these other areas of expertise inform his current practice. And he will tell us all about it in our conversation this morning. He's also going to discuss, well, gerontology and the aging population here in Park City and how his unique focus may provide him a sort of overview and a holistic view of serving this age group. Dr. Farrell, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. You'll want to get right up to that microphone.
Okay.
So gerontology, and I don't know if and what the number have been in town previously of gerontologists. I bet you could tell us that.
Sure, absolutely. Let me clarify a couple things, and it's a very common misconception. There's gerontology and geriatric medicine. Gerontology is generally the study of aging. These are, you know, master's levels, PhD level researchers and practitioners and so forth that really study the aging process. Geriatric physicians are physicians generally who are either family medicine docs originally or internal medicine docs who do another year or two of specialty training in geriatric medicine to specialize in the care of our older patient population.
Oh, good distinction. And so what are you then?
I'm a geriatric physician.
Okay.
Yeah. So geriatric physicians do medical school, 4 years of medical school, and then generally a three-year residency, and then followed by a year or two fellowship in geriatric medicine.
Interesting. And I have to ask you about osteopathy, because every once in a while we interview a doctor of osteopathy, and I think the distinction is really interesting, but I'd love for you to re-up my knowledge about that.
Sure, absolutely. There are two fully certified types of physicians in the United States, MDs, which are allopathic physicians, and DOs, which are osteopathic physicians. They both go to 4 years of medical school. They are both eligible for the same residencies after their 4 years of medical school, and generally practice very much similarly in the community. There are DO neurosurgeons and orthopedic surgeons, just as they are MDs. In medical school, we do receive specialty training in the neuromuscular skeletal system and how it relates to the rest of the body. And there are some specific DOs that really specialize in what's called osteopathic manipulative medicine. Mm-hmm. And these are phenomenal physicians that are much better than I am. Some exclusively practice this way. And that's one of the, you know, the distinctive qualities of DOs versus an MD. And they do a lot of manipulative medicine and that kind of thing. So.
How did you end up at Redstone? I mean, and I'm asking this because we obviously have an aging population. I mean, we look at all of our demographic studies, and the baby boomers are aging. That's a sort of a, you know, worldwide thing that's happening, certainly a national thing. But here in Park City, we have residents who arrived here 30, 40 years ago, have created their lives, raised their kids, and we're all getting older.
Right.
So is that part of it? Did the University of Utah say, hey, you know, we've got an aging population up here, we've got a clinic, and we need a physician of geriatrics?
Precisely, yeah. As far as I know, I'm the only geriatric physician in Summit and Wasatch County.
Well, there's the answer to the first question, right?
and my apologies if there is a geriatrician out there that I don't know about, but nonetheless, and to answer your question about the aging population, that's precisely why I'm in Park City. We call it the silver tsunami. It's coming. The baby boomer generation that was born after World War II. Really, the patients 65 and older, which is where my specialty really focuses.
Well, you won't be seeing me for a while, actually. 5 years.
Represents about 1 in 7 Americans right now. Mm-hmm. By 2050, it's expected that 20% or 1 in 5 patients will be over the age of 65. So we've got a big, big, let's say, opportunity coming with a, you know, aging population. And that's coming back to your question, why I'm in Park City. First of all, like a lot of us, I love it here. My patient population here is very, very different than it was when I was in Orange County or in Salt Lake, which is where I did my fellowship. I have a very active, healthy patient population, and that's often why patients come to see me or why physicians refer their patients to me, because my goal is to get my 65-year-old to 95 and still skiing.
And we always joke about, you know, 50's the new 40, and 65, it sounds like, from your perspective, is the new whatever it was, because this group up here in Park City, they are so active. They are fairly, I would think, everything's relative, right? So in relative terms, they're active. In relative terms, they're healthy. And what can you see from that, having worked in these other locations with like age populations, but very different populations? Is it a Park City thing, or is it a national thing? We're all a little younger when we're a little older.
Absolutely. Well, Park City, like other communities across the United States that have very, very active citizens, live longer and live healthier lives. And Park City is no exception. We have a wonderful outdoor community with a wonderful summer and wintertime recreational activities out here. And we just have a healthier patient population. With that being said, you know, we do have patients that are not very healthy. And that's really where a geriatrics physician's expertise can help a lot of these patients. And that's why a lot of physicians refer them to me. Because, you know, we get to the age of 75 and 80, and sometimes patients are on as much as 20 medications. And it really helps to have somebody, you know, coming back to your word of holistic approach, to kind of have a 30,000-foot view on how to care for these patients. And so, you know, that's why I love it here. Some of my patients are 80 and still skiing, and some of my 80-year-olds are not very healthy either. And I really like those that patient population. Geriatricians are often called complexivist. So we really kind of specialized in patients that have multiple comorbid conditions, COPD, heart failure, renal failure. When all of those kind of come together, it really helps to have somebody that has a lot of experience dealing with how all of those processes really interact.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Michael Farrell. He's a geriatric physician, or a geriatrician, and I'm kind of
like
stuck. I'm stuck back on that first clarification. I'm quite sure that when I read your bio, it said geriatrician, and I just translated it in my mind to gerontologist. So I'm really glad you made that, because I'm hoping that if I made the mistake, lots of other people do too.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's a common misconception. And to further confuse you, there are a lot of geriatricians that are also gerontologists. Oh. They either did a master's degree or a PhD degree, really kind of on the research component on the process of aging.
Oh, that is
confusing. I'm not one
confusing. Of those. Okay, but I will say that you do further confuse us, because you also have an MBA. What's that about? And what came first?
I did my MBA during, I'm originally a family medicine physician, so I did my MBA during my residency.
Which is an easy thing
to do. Yeah, you weren't busy enough.
Yeah, had all this free
time. It was pretty busy. I like keeping busy, let's put it that way. You know, I got my MBA for no other reason than physicians are notoriously horrible business people. And I, at the time, was very much involved in health policy at the level of the American Medical Association and so forth. And I just really wanted some additional training so I could speak intelligently amongst other, you know, health policy stakeholders. And I'm glad I did it, but it was a busy time.
That's, you know, sure. You could get cast out of the tribe for making that statement that you just made about physicians being notoriously bad investors.
I think they probably,
because they all think they're like really good at it, is my understanding.
Absolutely.
My very limited experience is that they all think they're really good in business.
There is, you know, at least let me speak from my personal experience that I did not have much business acumen, and I solicited that through formal training.
That's great. So let's go back too, because this was a question I was going to ask you, but you sort of broached the topic, and this is that 30,000-foot view, and the view that maybe someone who's come from the tradition of osteopathy might have, and that would counsel me, for example, when I'm 75, I don't want to be on a single medication. And I just know from watching my mother-in-law, who, you know, she was probably on 25 different medications, and one to counteract the effects of this, and then the next one to counteract, you know, anyway, and on and on down the line. What is our best, you know, how are you going to help me achieve that if I come to you at age 65?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, medications that you may have been started on in your 30s and 40s and 50s act very differently when we're 65 and 75. So again, when people come to me, that's what I do. That's what our formal education training in geriatric medicine is to really look at the patient as a whole, including all of their medications and including all of their multiple medical conditions that are being treated with these medications. And again, kind of going back, a medication at your 50s acts very differently, maybe in your 75s, you know, year-old patient population and so forth. And so from a 30,000-foot view, not only medications, but, you know, the goals of the patient change sometimes. And sometimes, not, you know, we as physicians or in the medical community don't always ask our patients that. Sometimes they don't want to be on all these medications. So they just think that if we stop them, they're going to die or something like that, you know, and that's not always the case. And so it's really a great opportunity to, when I see a patient sometimes on a consult basis, to really kind of hit the control alt delete on, hey, let's sit down. You're here at 79 years old. How did you get here and where do you want to go? From a holistic standpoint, it's really important to bring in to kind of the biological, social and psychological factors of the patients. Again, I did additional training in, I did the mini neurology fellowship at the University of Utah. So I really also specialize in the cognitive disorders of older patients. So Alzheimer's, dementia, Lewy body dementia, and so forth. And so I have a particular interest in that. So I'm seeing a lot of patients in our county and zip code and so forth, in which I'm doing a lot of cognitive evaluations and so forth, which I really enjoy.
Does red wine count as medication? Because that's the only one that I believe Lynn and I are both on at this point, if it does.
I tell my patients who often ask me that about red wine or any alcohol, your cardiologist might say that one glass of wine is at least not bad for you and may be good for you in some cases, but your neurologist will never tell you that.
Yeah. So it sounds like you spend a fair amount of time dealing with patients' histories and getting to know them. Just out of curiosity, what does a typical visit, let's say a first-time visit, how long will you spend with this potential patient to get some of that? I mean, are you talking, is it an in-and-out quick? Is it got this whole schedule of people?
I don't mean to interrupt you. I am so fortunate, and I intentionally design my practice this way, and the University of Utah has been great in allowing me to spend 1 hour with a new patient. And all of my subsequent follow-up patients are generally about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of time of just face-to-face time.
And that's kind of a wellness practice, is it not? I mean, that's a lot different than hitting the Control-Alt-Delete, getting rid of all these medications, which is part of also a wellness practice. But it's understanding, as you said, how you got here and where you want to go. That's a different thing than what hurts and how do we deal with it.
Precisely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the first time I meet a patient, it might be a meet and greet from another physician who sent them to me. Or sometimes it's a new patient that really just wants to establish care with a geriatric physician, in which I would act as their primary care, essentially, and so forth. And then to answer your question on the on wellness, well, very much every visit should be focused on wellness of a patient. There is a formal, what's called the annual wellness visit that Medicare permits once a year for all patients over the age of 65 or who are on Medicare in which they don't have a copay. And the focus of that visit is very much directed at wellness.
Mm. You know, we have been doing a lot of interviews recently on the how your dietary choices can affect your brain health and performance. Genius Foods, Max Lugavere, and then Dr. Lisa Moscone. I forget what her brain food, I think,
brain
is
food, yeah.
Is her book. And so talk about that a little bit, what you're seeing, you know, in your practice with getting your patients to adjust their diets and what are you having them eat? Other than blueberries?
Pretty loaded question, and that can be, you know, I don't think you're focusing on a well-balanced, healthy diet that includes, you know, a certain amount of, you know, proteins and fats and fruits and vegetables is always something I'm advocating for. It also depends on the patient, right? Sometimes I have a lot of patients that are on diabetes, which might require more of a kind of a radical caloric restriction and diet and so forth. And patients with cardiovascular disease kind of have different focuses. In addition to what we should eat, you know, I talk a lot of the times about what we should not eat, right? Simple carbohydrates are generally quite bad for us. More than one alcoholic drink for females, more than two for a male is generally not a good idea. Smoking is obviously very detrimental to our health. So I focus a lot of time on taking things away and encouraging our patients to focus on eating healthy. And there's plenty of things out on the internet and so forth that really focus on this, that I just really encourage when I sit down and talk to my patients about nutrition. What is really practical, right? If they're used to eating, you know, In-N-Out burger all the time down in the valley, telling them to go to a completely vegan diet is not really practical. So I like to start with baby steps.
My mouth just watered.
Yeah.
Would that be because of
the In-N-Out burger mention?
How did your vegan challenge go, by the way? No. There must be pillars to your practice, and nutrition may or may not be a significant pillar or a leg on the stool. But is there a simplistic way to say, here are the pillars of what we try to do?
The pillars of geriatric medicine are essentially really focusing on the biological, psychological, and sociological processes of our patients. So those would be, I think, the three pillars. Dietary changes, obviously, in the biological and maybe psychological and sociological components of that. Mm-hmm. So it really all kind of entails all of that. But dietary is a big component of my practice, for sure. Absolutely. But just like any other physician visit, it's going over your medications, going over your past surgical history, goals of care, and I think one of the biggest components of my practice up here in Park City is prevention. So a lot of my patients are 65, 75. You know, how often should we be sending our patients for colonoscopies? Should we continue checking prostate levels when we're in our 80s, et cetera, and so forth? So I'm big on prevention and screening.
Mm. I would imagine that you have the question that comes your way that is, says something like, okay, I want to be able to do that century bike ride when I am 85. And in training for that, how do I best recover most quickly? You know, I bet you get a lot of questions like that.
I do. I can't say a lot of my 80-year-olds are doing centuries on the bike. But I do have patients that are incredibly active. But what is important, particularly at altitude, is that we evaluate where the patient is, make sure that we're not putting them at risk by really escalating their endurance and exercise and starting kind of slow and then maybe even having kind of a monitored exercise program to make sure that we're not putting them at risk. But absolutely, if I could get all of my patients at 80 doing centuries and doing a million vertical in the mountain, would be phenomenal.
Okay, Lynn said 85 and you've gone to 80. I can see how this is going to play out. You're going to like it.
I just remember when I was in college doing a century bike ride and a woman who at that time, she looked to me like she must be about 80.
And she was probably 60.
Me. Yeah, I know. She's probably like
48.
45. But she passed me and I said, okay, when I'm 80, I'm going to do a century ride. So we'll see. I can't wait to come to you though. I've got some years to go.
A lot of years to go.
Dr. Michael Farrell, he is a geriatric physician at the Redstone Clinic here in Park City. Now, are you here full time or do you come and go between?
I am now in Park City full time.
Great.
And do you live up here?
I do, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. And I'm not leaving.
Nor should you. And this is great to have you in town. And obviously, you can look up the Redstone Clinic, find you there if you want to make an appointment. And how far? I bet you just have a huge practice already.
We're pretty busy.
Okay.
That's for sure. And we've had two doctors that have retired from our practice. So I have a lot of, established care patients that are also coming over to me and seeing. So it's a great time to be here and busy's good.
Yeah.
Obviously for you, busy is really good. I think maybe you should consider another master's degree while you're doing it.
Yeah.
I've promised my wife I'm done training and no more student loans.
Isn't there anything else you're looking for a little additional acumen in, some other area?
I'd like to improve my golf game.
There we go.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. You can do that here. Dr. Farrell, thank you so much for joining us.
Great, I really appreciate you having me, guys.
Stay with us. We'll be back after this.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alf Engen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museum. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at utaholympiclegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
Hi, this is Katie Wang, director of the Park City Film Series, inviting you to put down your gadgets and come on over to the Jim Santee Auditorium to enjoy great stories on the big screen alongside your friends, neighbors, and fellow Parkites. Who knows? You might even win something before the movie. Films are rolling now, so check out our calendar at parkcityfilmseries.org and then join us on Friday and Saturday nights at 8 p.m. or Sundays at 6 p.m. The Park City Film Series, Park City's home for independent cinema since 1995 and sponsor of KPCW's Friday Film Review.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life.
Lynn, did I mention we're podcastable? We want to thank our underwriters, Valley Behavioral Health, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Davidson Orthopedics, Park City Mountain, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, Park Meadows Country Club, and San Francisco Design.
And you've been listening to KPCW Park City.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, FredMarshallPainting.com, and the Corporation for